Today on Heavy Networking, we talk security. We all know security is hard, and it feels like it's getting harder. You know, the network you've built and run is expressly designed to connect users and customers to applications and data, but it's also a vehicle for malware, exploits, and intruders. The network's being asked to do more filtering, more scanning, more blocking, and more decision-making to try to keep out the bad stuff. But we're also seeing the limits of things like antivirus, anti-malware, intrusion prevention, and next-gen firewalls. You know, even if these products are 99.99% effective, one mistake is all that an attacker needs to get a toehold. On today's sponsored show, we're going to talk with ExtraHop about how to use the network and network engineers and admins who run it as a critical security asset, a resource to detect and respond to attacks before they do serious damage. We're also going to talk about cloud security and getting visibility around what's happening in the cloud. Our guest is ExtraHop founder and CTO, Jesse Rothstein. Jesse, welcome back to the podcast. To get us started, what is your perspective on the current state of enterprise security?
Thank you for having me, Drew. It's always a pleasure. in terms of the, you know, the current state of cybersecurity, bit of a broad question. I think cybersecurity is always an arms race, and there are always reasons to be optimistic and maybe reasons to be pessimistic as well. It's hard not to be a little pessimistic when you look at just the increased rate of data breaches and compromises. You know, despite projected annual spend of about $124 billion, we're still seeing increases of, yes, billion with a B. We're still seeing increases in data breaches and compromises. And I think to a large degree, I might attribute that to just the ever-growing attack surface. I might attribute that to the threat actors are transitioning a bit from, you know, hackers and script kiddies and cyber criminals to organizations with nation state backing. And these nation states are doing this for both monetary and strategic gain. Mm-hmm. So I think that's certainly contributing to the increased number of breaches.
In spite of the obvious incompetence of cybersecurity generously, I mean, if you're spending that sort of money and you've still got that many vulnerabilities, I guess, on the other hand, you've got to balance like the nation state actors who are really stepping up their capabilities. I guess the question that I really want to kick off here is there's a fundamental shift going on in security as such, where we're moving from what I call prevention-based security to detection-based security. And this is happening fairly widely across the industry, and ExtraHop is, of course, one of the leading proponents of this. So it is kind of a leading question, but it's valid, right? We're moving from firewalls and configuration management and, you know, using automation to create policies and to see what's going on. And what we're finding is that, especially when you're in the public cloud and you try and configure public cloud services, which is enormously complex, way more complex than on-premise stuff, we're still seeing gaps. And so what I think we're shifting to is a detection-based or real-time security model where you've actually got tools there looking for what's going wrong and detecting them before the bad guys find them.
I couldn't agree more, Greg. This is a fundamental shift, or at least it's a pendulum. I think the pendulum tends to swing back and forth. And over the past decade or so, a lot of investment has really focused on protection and prevention. And these are, you know, this is the defense in depth strategy. So different layers of defense at the perimeter to keep the attackers out, you know, routers, gateways, firewalls, next generation firewalls, layers of defense at the endpoint as well, you know, whether it's traditional antivirus, next generation antivirus. But what we found is that despite all of this investment and the best laid plans, attackers do get in, breaches do occur. You know, a threat actor can launch 1,000 arrows or 100,000 arrows or 1,000,000 arrows, 100,000,000 arrows, and only one needs to land. And that's why this is not really an either or situation. This is an and. Organizations need to invest in protection and prevention, but they also need to invest in detection and response, because more and more, I think they're beginning to realize that it's a matter of when, not if, a breach occurs. And what we've seen with the industry averages for quite some time now is that the dwell time, the amount of time that an attacker is in an environment before they're actually detected is far too long.
Let me ask two questions about how ExtraHop does this, right? I think, you know, we can all talk about, I think everybody knows about these problems. I don't think we need to talk about the whys. Let's talk about solving it, right? So there's two areas I think ExtraHop does really good work here. One is network detection and response. And the other one is the fact that you're integrated with the public cloud, because the public cloud is where the attack, I think most people know how to manage the attack service in their own data centers. We're kind of okay with that. But where a lot of the weakness seems to be is in the cloud. So there's two areas I want you to outline. How do you make it happen in the public cloud? What is ExtraHop doing in the public cloud? And then two, what is this NDR service that I've been reading about?
First, just taking a step back, I'm a tremendous fan of network detection and response. I think the network has three great properties that you just don't find in other data sources that are great for cybersecurity. Number one, the network is as close as to ground truth as you can get. If you see it on the network, if you observe it, you know that it happened. Number two, it's very difficult to tamper with. And number three, it's basically impossible to turn off, or at least in a way where nobody would notice. So we start with these fundamental properties of the network. And I want to clarify that XDROP offers network detection response across hybrid environments. So we work on-prem, we work on in virtual environments, we work in your data centers, on campus, but we've also been making big investments in public cloud. Public cloud in particular, I think is difficult because the security tools are relatively nascent. You know, there are many, many configuration options. There are many settings to get right. The controls exist, but I think in many cases, the expertise and the best practices might be somewhat lacking. So when you take a survey of the cloud security space, you see a lot of scanning, you know, what amounts to either vulnerability scanning or static scanning of your container images and your VM images. You see a lot of API scanning to try to recommend best practices and potential misconfigurations. And then you see some analogs of what we recognize on-prem, you know, some firewalls, some gateways, some proxies that almost feel like they're shoehorned into public cloud. But I think what we've been lacking for a long time is visibility. You know, we have a torrent, you know, kind of a voluminous amount of log files that organizations will stash into some sort of object store or some sort of SIM, but that doesn't necessarily mean that anybody's paying attention and analyzing it. And until recently, we really didn't have the network visibility, which provides all of those great properties for cybersecurity. So I think the cloud workloads themselves have felt fairly opaque.
So what you're saying there is that, let me just read that back to you and you can tell me if I've got this right in my head. There are security tools out there that collect all the public cloud logs, you know, your Route 53, your into cloud formation, and then they analyze those logs looking for security tools. You know, my experience with log files over the years has been sort of, not so much, you know? There's plenty of times where the log files get lost or the generation of the log files is unstable or unpredictable and things go wrong. And you're sort of saying, really, the best source of log data is the network itself, and capture that data and analyze that, that would be XDROP's value?
I would never say to choose one or the other. Right. Storing and analyzing your log files is certainly a best practice, but I would say that the network visibility is a great overlay on top of the log data that you might already have because of that ground truth and that it's so difficult to tamper with or turn off. We can also see things from a network visibility perspective that we might not see in the log files. It's not uncommon, even vulnerabilities aside, you know, for XDROP to observe potential supply chain attacks where workloads that organizations think are fairly immutable and self-contained are actually reaching up to, you know, package management systems and open source repositories in the cloud and downloading things. They might not have realized they were doing that. Similarly, we might be able to detect lateral movement among cloud and container workloads or cloud native workloads that would simply not be logged because that sort of lateral movement from instance to instance or pod to pod is not generally something that's logged. And then I think a final point that's worth mentioning is that one of the challenges with log analysis is that log files themselves are inherently unstructured or loosely structured.
Yeah.
And that's why your SIMs and your log analysis tools, they do a lot of queries, they do a lot of regular expression-based matching, but it's very difficult for them to build high-quality detection models on top of that because in many cases, they don't know what they're looking at.
You know, how can you instrument to get this network visibility in the cloud in that you don't have access to that infrastructure because the cloud providers essentially they decide what you get and what you don't.
Well, actually, Drew, that has recently changed, and I nobody's happier about this change than I am. In the past, we had to deploy some sort of software tap, which was a little bit of a poor substitute for a network tap. It was basically an agent that you would have to install on your servers or your virtual routers that would forward traffic to us for analysis purposes. You know, think of it kind of like a TCP dump on without any of the actual, you know, packet dissecting, you know, just forwarding. This was deployment friction and you couldn't really be guaranteed that you were seeing everything. After years of requests from us and I think from very large customers who have been demanding this visibility for security purposes, for forensics, for diagnostic reasons, the public cloud providers have finally started to roll out essentially network tapping as a service. Microsoft Azure was the first to announce it with their VTAP. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that remains, it has not yet GA'd. And then AWS back in June at the Reinforce conference in Boston actually launched their AWS VPC traffic mirroring capability. So this is essentially a virtual network tap that you can configure that sends a copy of the packets for diagnostic purposes or for analysis.
That's a hallelujah moment right there. That is just what you want. You don't want to have to install agents, or you don't want to put virtual machines in the flow to try and capture packets at line rate. You want the underlying cloud provider to just say, here's a copy of every packet inside of that VPC. Go.
Greg, it is exactly what we want. And it's even better than that, because these have the type of strict access control policies that the public cloud is good at. Mm-hmm. So you can have a VPC traffic mirroring session set up such that the security team is the only team that can enable or disable it, while other teams, maybe DevOps teams, have the ability to spin up and spin down their workloads. So it really can make it difficult or impossible to tamper with, which is great.
So you've got all of the security controls that you would have in your private data center, like you would put a physical tap on the cable, and the only way people could get to the physical tap to prevent the monitoring would be to get physical access to the data center and so on and so on. The cloud provider gives you the same, not the same, but similar sort of access controls by saying, if you want to take a copy of the packets, you can put it into this part of the identity, and only people with this level of classification can ever touch that configuration, and then done.
That is correct. It is a game changer in the virtual or cloud world. And I'll say that it's one that's been a long time coming. I've always believed that in the fullness of time, there would be nothing of use, of utility, that you could do on-prem that you couldn't eventually be able to do in public cloud. But for some reason, the ability to take a tap of the traffic had kind of stood apart as one of the very few exceptions. And I'm glad that 2019 is finally the year of kind of cloud packet tapping.
So then with this tap, you can direct it to some kind of broker to direct it to different types of tools, including ExtraHop. Is that the idea?
You could direct it to some sort of broker, or you could direct it directly to ExtraHop. In some cases, the broker is only necessary if you want to send it to multiple tools. Uh-huh. If you just want to send it to ExtraHop, we support the VPC traffic mirroring and the Azure VTAP natively.
And are these packets going to another cloud service or to someplace on-prem, or can I decide?
Well, Drew, that's a great question. First, I would never recommend sending it on-prem, because you do incur data transfer charges, just like with any cloud data, if you ship it around regions or out to the internet. And also, when we, packet data tends to be very voluminous. So I believe in data gravity, where you want to perform the analysis near to where that data is. So we would always recommend a sensor basically, at or near the VPC that's generating the traffic. That said, ExtraHop has two deployment models in public cloud. One is kind of a self-managed deployment model, where you can run ExtraHop images, essentially AMIs that are sensors. You can deploy them yourself, and you can direct the traffic mirroring to these sensors for analysis. And you control everything about that and all of the data and all of the deployment. And then the second option we have is called RevealX Cloud. And that's a SaaS offering, where we will manage all of the ExtraHop infrastructure. And all you have to do is point your VPC traffic mirroring session to ExtraHop, and we'll take care of the rest. We'll provide for you an access anywhere user interface that gives you visibility into the analytics platform and all of our detection capabilities. We'll manage the infrastructure. We'll upgrade it. It really depends on an organization what their preference is, and we want to give them that choice.
This is a good point to talk about SSL and TLS interception or decryption, because most of the traffic that's in the cloud now is actually encrypted to the host. We don't, in the private data center, quite often we do the SSL decryption at the edge in some sort of load balancer, and then everything's unencrypted and it's really easy to capture it and inspect it. But in the cloud, quite often it's encrypted all the way to the VM. How does ExtraHop solve that one?
Well, decryption is a big topic. ExtraHop has supported out-of-band decryption for analysis purposes for, I think, the better part of a decade now. We were one of the early early pioneers in this space, and I think we remain one of the only vendors with an actual solution. What's changed a bit in the decryption landscape, and I'll try not to go too deep here, is that the previous generation of cipher suites were based on RSA public key cryptography. So that meant that all you had to do was give Xdrop access to your private key, and we could decrypt all the traffic because we could derive the session keys from all the information that was on the wire. Mm-hmm. What has changed in recent years, and this has been a slow but accelerating shift since kind of the Edward Snowden disclosures, is that the internet as a whole has shifted to cipher suites that have the perfect forward secrecy property. Mm. They're generally based on Diffie-Hellman key exchanges, you know, whether traditional Diffie-Hellman or an elliptic curve-based Diffie-Hellman. And what that property means is that you can no longer derive the session key with the information that's on the wire alone from the private key. Right. So Xdrop offers a very unique and very novel secret sharing approach where we will forward the session key to Xdrop over a secured channel for analysis purposes only. Now, we'll discard the session key after we're done with the analysis, or at your option, we can keep the individual session key along with the packets if we're performing continuous packet capture. So this means that an analyst can actually do forensics, you know, looking at the actual packets and decrypt them without requiring access to the long-term private key, but just receives access to the individual session keys.
Now, that requires an agent on the host to share the session key with Xdrop.
It requires an agent on the host or something that's terminating the SSL. So we actually integrate with load balancers like an F5 load balancer.
So you integrate with lots of different toys, you know, load balancers, a host. But that's a fundamental shift from capturing packets and redirecting them. That's just saying, here's the session key for this, send it over. That's not a very complicated piece of shim to add onto a Linux server or a Windows box.
It's not. I mean, its deployment is required because, you know, we're not an eavesdropping device. And if we could decrypt the traffic without anything at all, then encryption wouldn't work very well. Yes. This is for infrastructure that you control. So, if you're building, you know, these services or microservices, and you want this for diagnostic purposes, you would install Xdrop. And you're right. It is an extremely lightweight shim. Kind of similar to what you would do for an HSM or a cloud HSM. Yeah, we only hook in at the handshake at the moment that session key is derived, and then we share that to Xdrop over a secured channel.
And that's it. It's not like you're, you know, burning up CPU time, generating, correct, capturing, translating, pulling stuff out of memory. It's literally
there should be no measurable CPU overhead required.
Yeah, just for those people in the audience who are thinking, putting software on the servers is always a dead-end game for networking, which historically it has been. This is a very lightweight piece of thing. But it does solve that problem if you're trying to get this decryption. But then again, you're not in line. You're decrypting from the packet capture because you get the key. So you're not in the line. You're not adding to latency. You're not adding delay. You're not adding to a key point of failure. You're just taking the copy of the packets and decrypting post after the fact.
That's correct, Greg, and it's something I believe in. I believe that out-of-band analysis based purely on observation is more powerful than being in line where you could potentially perturb the things that you want to analyze. Hmm. There are a number of other products out there that perform some sort of SSL interception where they'll actually, you know, intercept the traffic and re-encrypt it. And really, across the board, those products lower your security posture. There have been a lot of studies on this where the SSL interception device itself often negotiates,
you're negotiating TLS 1.3 at the highest level of cryptography, but it's encrypting at, you know, TLS 1.0 obsolete and unsafe, you know.
That certainly happens. And even when they do a good job of negotiating the SSL version themselves, they don't support things like certificate revocation, OCSP stapling. They'll break things like certificate pinning. It really does lower your security posture across the board. But the point I was going to make is not only does that occur, but when it sends a decrypted feed for analysis, you're not looking at the real packets anymore. It's like fake news. You're looking at fake packets. And these fake packets that are decrypted are missing some information that you see in the originals, information around timing, around kind of inter-packet gaps and such that we can use for pretty sophisticated traffic analysis.
I just want to very quickly touch on this before we get back to the NDR and the cloud stuff. If I've just got this packet stream flowing into my Xdrop, and even when it's encrypted, you're still saying you can get viable security signals out of that. Is that literally down to machine learning, fingerprinting, heuristics, and all that sort of like mathematical magic? Is that really what it is?
It is, but this is where I'm going to walk a fine line here. On the one hand, you can get good information from the encrypted traffic stream itself. You can perform some sophisticated network traffic analysis. You can develop models and heuristics, which we've done to detect, you know, potential, for example, interactive traffic or command and control traffic. You can see some information like the SNI for where this is going and the IP addresses, the participants. And there's been a lot of work around fingerprinting, like JAW3 fingerprints, where you can take some fingerprints and make a pretty solid guess around, you know, what the SSL client is, the SSL TLS client, what the SSL TLS server is. That said, it's always better to decrypt. I've seen a lot of vendors make some pretty outrageous claims about being able to infer information with encrypted traffic, which they simply can't do. You know, if they were able to infer the level of information that they claim to, then encryption would be leaking so much information that it would hardly be useful. And that's just simply not the case. Right. So I want to walk the line here and say that, yes, you can see a lot of information from the encrypted traffic, but it's still much better to decrypt it because that's what gives you visibility into the actual payload, the actual users. That's how you can detect things like SQL injection and cross-site scripting attacks. Yep. That's how you can look at resources being accessed and, you know, RPC endpoints and services.
At the end of the day, an application attack is an application attack and a network attack is a network attack. If you want to know if someone's doing a cross-site scripting, no amount of fingerprinting of packet formats and sequences will give you that.
That is correct. And I do think that there are just many vendors out there in the space that don't have a good answer for encryption. So they're overstating their ability to extract information from encrypted traffic streams. I see that a lot, unfortunately.
Okay, so the prime takeaway is you can do some basic analysis with encrypted traffic, but you also have set up a system where you can get the encrypted payload and decrypt it to do this forensic analysis over the long term.
That's correct, Drew. XDrop can do both. We do all of the analysis of the encrypted traffic stream, and we've built up models, and we extract as much information there as we can, but we can also decrypt it out of band at line rate. And visibility into the decrypted traffic is so much richer and allows us to detect entirely different classes of attacks.
And this applies both to on-premises and in the cloud.
It does. This applies to both.
So I think I want to move the conversation now on to this network detection and response. I think we sort of laid out a broad vision for how ExtraHop has sort of made a transition into the public cloud, particularly, I've got to tell you, that AWS TAP thing. And while I'm not at all surprised that Azure's promised something but hasn't delivered, that's very Microsoft. But I think that changes the game for you. But the question here is then, once you've got the data telling you that something's going on, the question is, what do you do in a response? And you've moved into that detection and response game.
Greg, you can tell that I'm very passionate about it. So I think that the ability to have network tapping as a service within public cloud isn't just good for ExtraHop. I think it's good for the world. So yeah. It's something I'm extremely excited about.
Yeah.
And you know, not just for my own self-interest or agenda. But in terms of network detection and response, I'm a huge believer in using the network for cybersecurity. I think it's a fundamental data source. I think it has the great properties that I mentioned before, close to ground truth.
That's why you founded ExtraHop. How many years ago? 15? 20 years ago?
No, not quite that long. I've been doing this for about a dozen years, but we did a couple years of R&D, so we've been selling product for about 10 years now. And we've grown every single year, and I think every year we continue to add new capabilities and really push the envelope.
Yeah.
But in terms of the network detection and response, this is a fundamentally different approach, and it's an evolution that I think we could have expected. For many years, IDSs and IPSs have been around, but they've been primarily signature based. Yep. They have a big, you know, big libraries of signatures that are almost, you know, packet based regex. I think we've all looked at snort rules before, and these things tend to be very, very noisy with lots of false positives, and they tend to be very, very hard to investigate. You know, so when your IDS IPS is kind of shouting out alerts all day long, kind of like an alert cannon, it takes a very high level of skill to then go back to the packets themselves and maybe figure out, you know, what actually triggered this alert, and is this a false positive or is this a true positive? So we're seeing the same innovation in network security that we've perhaps seen on the endpoint space. You know, that same transition from, you know, antivirus to EDR, we're seeing in networking where, I think the term machine learning is a bit overused, and I think a lot of vendors talk about, you know, AI this and AI that, but the state of the art is such that we're now able to build sophisticated behavioral models and detect with much higher quality suspicious behaviors and potential threats.
I agree. So,
are you talking about
I do think a lot of it's statistical regression rather than actual ML or AI. But anyway, push on.
There's both. I mean, I can describe some of the types of ML that we're using, and you're right in the sense that kind of conventional sense of AI, kind of these deep learning neural networks are only somewhat useful in this space. I mean, this is not a binary classification problem. We're not trying to do hot dog, not hot dog. Yeah. And even if we were, there's a what's called a class imbalance problem because you know any model is going to optimize for getting the right answer most of the time. And attacks are rare events. So your model is quickly going to learn that if it just says that there's no attack, it's going to be right 99.99% of the time. So clearly that doesn't work when you're looking for rare events and such. So the first step is to start with some sort of anomaly detection or even robust anomaly detection. And that's somewhere between statistical and machine learning. There are definitely ML approaches to these robust anomaly detection algorithms. And we find that they work pretty well to detect rare events. But then where we start layering on more sophisticated ML and behavioral models is when we start doing things like identifying automatically peer groups within your environment. Hmm. You know, in any enterprise environment, you might not have, you know, one VoIP phone. You'll have 10,000 VoIP phones. And you would expect that all of those VoIP phones would behave more or less the same. So if one VoIP phone behaves very differently from all of its other peers, which you're able to infer through these models, then you know that there's a problem.
Yeah.
I think some of the other really sophisticated models that I'm excited about leverage graph theory and link prediction, where you start looking for unusual logins or unusual connections. One of the best kind of graph theory models that we deploy actually has to do with understanding privilege, because we were able to infer not just what are peer groups in your environment, but we can infer what are the most important devices in an environment or important endpoints.
So let me ask though, because you know, the industry's been talking about behavioral anomaly detection for years. It's even, I think, a Gartner category. It's been around, and we've heard the stories about what it's supposed to do. Oh, you know, this laptop or desktop is suddenly, you know, contacting this database that it never has before. That's a problem. Trigger an alert. Where's the evolution? What's different? What are we bringing to the space now that actually makes anomaly detection useful, viable, verifiable?
Well, Drew, you're absolutely correct. Network behavioral anomaly detection, NBAD, was a category like 12 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago. And then they evolved it to NBA, network behavioral analysis. But here's what's changed. It's not that the idea was wrong. They were missing a couple of key ingredients. At the time, they didn't have the tools, you know, the models that in the field. They didn't have the compute power, and they didn't have the features. So in data science problems all look pretty similar at a 30,000 foot view. Mm-hmm. You start with a big pile of data, and then you have your data scientists perform what's called feature engineering. So that's where they start looking at the features that really matter for the models. You perform feature extraction, and then you build and train models on those features. Mm. So the problem with network behavioral anomaly detection of 10 or 12 years ago is that it was primarily NetFlow and flow-based. Mm. And the NetFlow and flow-based products just simply, they had a couple dozen features to play with, and it just wasn't enough to perform high quality network security analytics. So what's changed with something like ExtraHop is that we're able to extract thousands of features for any individual host or endpoint. And we also have the compute power, especially in the cloud, that we're able to throw at this problem. And this is where our solution, I think, is different than a lot of the other solutions on the market. When I look at other kind of modern network, you know, products that claim to do network detection and response, they're running all of their detections on box. So that means that they're limited by the compute power of that appliance or that VM to actually constantly retrain and evaluate those models.
And whereas to update the data flows and to decrypt, you know, to not only to do the decryption, but, you know, all the stuff that needs to be done is
everything. The sensor and then all of the retraining and the evaluation.
The data storage, data recovery, it's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
That's correct. Now, where our solution is different is that we offer a cloud scale ML service. So, of course, we leverage the essentially infinite or unlimited compute power of public cloud in order to do all of our analysis and our our analysis of and building and retraining of these models. And it has a lot of benefits. You know, the benefits are that we have essentially unlimited compute power. It also means that we can iterate very quickly. You know, we've got an entire team that's constantly tuning and tweaking these models. It also means that we can run them across our entire customer base where we have hundreds and hundreds of connected customers and determine which ones are working well. And there's a network effect there where what we learn at one customer, we can then apply those learnings
but
to other customers.
But there's also the thing that you can say what you can see at 100 customers can be applied to one customer. That
Correct.
Is, you're that's, now that's, seeing not just the data for one network, you're seeing the data from hundreds or thousands of networks. With that data, you can now say, this is a known problem and apply it back. I'm not saying that very well, but you get my point, hopefully.
That is absolutely correct. The network effect is that we can apply learnings that we garner from across many, many dozens or hundreds of customers. Mm-hmm. And we're not limited to kind of this narrow aperture of what you see in a single sensor at a single site.
Okay.
Now, the disadvantage of any sort of, you know, kind of cloud scale or SaaS-oriented approach is really around data privacy and security. And, you know, I consider myself a bit of a, you know, at least a digital privacy enthusiast. I like my digital privacy. So it's something that I take very, very seriously. And we architected this service with security and privacy in mind from the ground up. You know, I wanted us to build a service that I'd be comfortable running in my own home. So what we've done is we took kind of a novel approach. We de-identify all of the data, all of the features before we send it to this cloud service.
Right.
Even to the point where we don't send IP addresses into the cloud service. We'll actually encrypt the individual IPs with a key that you control. And our cloud service only receives metadata and features. So it might know that A talked to B and attempted to log in, you know, 100 times and failed in this time interval. And then if the model says that that's unusual or potentially suspicious, it'll send the event back down to your environment or to your analytics portal, at which point it's re-identified with that cryptographic key that you control.
That's a real differentiator, because at the end of the day, you just need to know that host A is doing this. You know, client Z is attaching to host A. You don't need to know the IP address of Z or A necessarily. You just need
That's
to know.
That's correct. Now, for sophisticated detectors, we have to be very, very thoughtful about how we do our feature extraction.
Mm.
So for something like a ransomware detector, the naive approach would be to send every file that you access, you know, on a network share up into the cloud to analyze it. But there's a lot of sensitive information in those files.
Yeah,
it's very often that financial services institutions might name, you know, M&A events on the file name. HR departments will often have, you know, file names with like, you know, the Jesse termination report indicating that maybe I'm about to be terminated.
I've never done that.
So much sensitive information in these file names. So a better way to do that sort of feature extraction is, you know, we'll push down lists of interesting files that we're looking for. And then we'll also, you know, like known ransom notes, but then we'll also look for behaviors like the number of files that are read and then rewritten, but we'll do cardinality estimators for those so that we don't have to actually send any file information up. We just say, hey, you know, 10,000 files were just read and then rewritten. Is that normal? And if the answer is no, then it's a potential ransomware attack.
So most other organizations would do this using threat detection feeds. So there would be other people out there generating feeds of threat data, of known threat actions and fingerprints around those associated threat actions. Are you doing that as well, or are you entirely doing it on your own data sets?
So we do incorporate threat intelligence feeds, but a couple thoughts on those. You know, first, we found that threat intelligence feeds themselves are good for additional context and in some cases supporting evidence. So if you see certain behavior from an external endpoint that's already known to be suspicious, maybe you put it under some additional scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's enough gray area stuff out there that it's not necessarily that useful for you know, individual detections. Additionally, I would say that threat intelligence is only for your north-south traffic. So it's only for the internet-facing traffic and the external attackers. Whereas a lot of the behaviors that I'm describing and a lot of the NDR that we focus on is in that east-west corridor. So we're looking for the post-breach behavior, the indicators of compromise that an attacker is going to conduct once they've already got that initial toehold. This is what makes NDR so exciting. to me, Greg, yeah. Drew, is that the attack surface is so vast. And when you think about malware, for example, you know, there's tens of millions of pieces of malware. And these are pretty intractable problems. But when you look at the behaviors that an attacker will follow, you know, once they gain an initial toehold, that kind of post-breach behavior, there's a relatively small number of them, like just a dozen or two. You know, once they gain the toehold, an attacker is going to perform some sort of reconnaissance to see what else is in the environment. Right. They're going to perform some sort of lateral movement to kind of jump off from system to system, hopefully, you know, navigating the network and maybe finding a system of greater value.
So this comes back to what we opened up with, which is the change from the perimeter defense to the real-time detection and response.
Absolutely, it does. And this also maps to, you know, what's often called the attack chain, and Lockheed Martin has the cyber kill chain term, which is their copyrighted term for that. But what they're saying that there's a relatively small number of behaviors that an attacker is going to follow. So if we build models to detect those behaviors, then we have a very, very high probability of detecting that attacker once they're in your environment. And if you look at kind of the industry average dwell time, it's generally measured in months, you know, often around 3 months. There are, of course, terrible situations where certain organizations have had attackers in their environment for 3 or 4 years, and you know who they are.
Yeah,
because we read about them in the newspaper.
We make jokes about them now.
We do.
We do.
But just think about that for a second. Even let's look at the 3 month average. 3 months is a wildly long time for an attacker to have free reign in your environment.
Yeah.
You know, 3 weeks would be too long for my comfort. 3 days would be too long. You know, when we get down to 3 hours, I mean, I guess it's getting kind of acceptable, but there's still a lot you can do in 3 hours. You know, 3 minutes is maybe down to an acceptable range. So from my perspective, we're just, you know, we're a couple orders of magnitude off from where we need to be. And there's just so much room for improvement.
So this, then, I think, is probably a good time to pivot to response, because we've talked a bit about detection, anomaly detection, machine learning, statistical analysis. Now that you can say, okay, we think there's a threat actor inside the organization, what do we do?
The response in kind of network detection response can mean a wide range of things. You know, so sometimes response is your incident response process. And then sometimes it's some sort of automated response and automated remediation. And that really depends on an organization's comfort level. XtraOps perspective is that this is an ecosystem and an integration problem. There are entire categories of products, you know, the SOAR products, the security orchestration, automation, and response products, that are essentially workflow engines that will allow you to kind of using some sort of low code or no code environment, typically will allow you to craft an orchestrated response. That response could be some sort of approval process. It could be opening an incident, doing an escalation, but it could also be something like quarantining or isolation, which can occur at many levels. I think one of the challenges that we have with modern attacks is that some attacks are low and slow, where you have plenty of time to kind of, you know, orchestrate your response. But some attacks are advanced and persistent, where that dwell time is so long. But some attacks are just really fast and destructive. And the speed of those attacks are just beyond humans' ability to respond. So I think for those fast and destructive attacks, that's where we need to look toward automation and orchestration. And that automation is typically, you know, you want to isolate something that is potentially compromised first, and then you want to eradicate it, and only after that do you want to actually restore service.
So that's
kind of your standard playbook.
Yeah, that leads to another question for me. And that, before we jump into, you know, setting off a kill chain of tools and such, there has to be a validation phase where I say, okay, the system has told me this might be a problem. Who's looking at it? Am I trusting the system to just say, yes, this is a problem, or do I need human inference to analyze this? And how does all that come together?
Well, so that depends on the organization, and it depends on the technology. But typically, the current state of the art is that we still have humans kind of validate and verify these detections. I think that's extremely important, and it's something that I believe is actually a really strong core strength of the XtraOps RevealX platform, because we really began as an analytics platform, and we've built out the cybersecurity capabilities. And as an analytics platform, it means that we have really strong investigative workflows. Our goal is that in 0 or 1 clicks, we want a tier 1 analyst to be able to quickly validate whether this is a false positive or this looks like it could be a serious issue. Mm. And then the organization usually has a playbook or a runbook in place for that, where maybe they escalate to a tier two analyst to conduct some sort of investigation, and then ultimately incident response and forensics. So a lot of that depends on the organization, but ExtraHop, as given our pedigree in analytics, I think we have actually the strongest investigative workflow out there. Now, in terms of whether or not to automate that, here's what we've seen out in the industry. Many organizations are very uncomfortable about isolating, an endpoint or a workload without any sort of human approval process, because you could be pulling something very important out of production. Hmm. But what we have seen is that many organizations are reasonably comfortable cutting off internet access. So, you don't necessarily isolate it and yank it off the network, but you can block it at the firewall or the NGFW. And that could be a lifesaver in a data exfiltration event where, instead of losing terabytes or even petabytes of, sensitive proprietary information, maybe you're able to cut that off early. And if the result is, somebody's internet blinks out for a little while we're investigating whether or not it was a true positive, that in many cases is not a hefty price to pay.
I guess part of what I'm trying to probe at, though, is we talked earlier about IDS, where you might get 100 alerts in an hour, and that's just not you can't do that at a human scale. So with this ExtraHop platform, what kind of volume of events am I getting that somebody has to go validate this is real or not?
So it's difficult for me to give you exact numbers, but
of course,
our goal, and this is something that we focus on a lot, is that we're trying to make this such that it is not a noisy system, that it has we want to drastically increase the true positive rate. Everything that we detect is at least a mathematical anomaly or some sort of actual suspicious behavior, but does it actually indicate a breach depends on the situation. But we want to make it such that there are relatively few of these and that the system's not noisy and that in zero or one clicks, you can validate it. Now, Drew, if I'm completely honest, here's where the industry's working against us a little bit and maybe all vendors. Because in a sales process, and there's a commercial reality here, that behavior is not necessarily rewarded, because I'm describing to you real world behavior.
Yeah.
In a sales process, what often happens is there's a proof of concept or some sort of bake off where an organization who's considering an NDR purchase might benchmark a few of these different solutions, and generally they're going to run some basic kind of attack simulation. Either they're going to use some basic pen testing tools or do some port scans, maybe take a bunch of data and toss it up into an S3 bucket, generally low level of effort stuff. And what we found is that you win or lose these deals based on your ability to detect those. So that's where the industry is kind of in the sales process rewarding very sensitive detection. But then post-sales, once you've already made the purchase, you actually want a system that works really, really well and doesn't give you a bunch of false positives.
I just love the way, and they probably send random tests at it as well.
They send a lot of very low volume tests that don't often look like real attacks. Yeah. So in reality, we have to walk that line there. But where we've walked the line is that we introduce kind of a risk score. There's a composite score of the likelihood and the level of difficulty and our confidence. And then we've also introduced a bunch of what we call hygiene detections. So those are detections that we will offer up at only low volume, low rates of detection, maybe once a day or once a week or less. But it's something that we want to tell you about. Maybe you've got a server that's accepting telnet traffic and it shouldn't, or maybe you have a server that's got low key strength or something like that.
I think the interesting thing here is that not only do you have the network detection response, so you're doing the stream processing, you'll be able to search for known events and flag them up with a risk code attached, but then you've also got the post response thing. That is, we talked earlier about capturing packets and being able to decode them. If you're actually in a SOC and you're manning this console and you want to see what is it that happened, or even if you want to do a forensic post-event triage type thing on what was it, why was it, and you've got legal compliance, you've got the packets here attached to the event, and it's very easy to move from event, trigger, reaction and then to start deep diving on it to say, actually, I can see the packets. I can see what happened. I can guarantee that nothing was exfiltrated.
Well, Greg, that's absolutely true. And I want to distinguish between the investigative workflow and the forensics. For us, the investigative workflow is something that we work very, very hard to streamline. We want to make it such that a tier one analyst can make these decisions very quickly and validate our detections. Is this is this a false positive or is this a true positive? And then the forensics, I'm a huge fan of packets, but I would tell you that packets should be the last thing that you look at, not the first thing, because it simply doesn't scale. When we look at the volume of network traffic and when we also look at the skill set that's required, these are high value skills.
I'm getting shivers generally, when you said that. I'm going like, because
generally in an organization, you have very few people who are able to really, really dissect and understand a packet capture.
It's also that, but so, now we're talking about 10 gigabits per second of data. You can only make sense of the packets if you can narrow the search down to exactly what it is you're looking for. Yes, packets are absolutely the ultimate source of truth, but capturing 100 gigabit per second or a 10 gigabit section packet flow, you just can't make any sense of that unless you've got some sort of mechanization or automation to help you narrow in on the thing that matters.
That's 100% true. I think that's even one of the founding principles of ExtraHop. We built ExtraHop because we recognized that, in my short lifetime, I've seen network speeds go from 2 megabits all the way to 100 gigabits. And it was many years ago, in my opinion, that we started exceeding humans' ability to really, analyze any sort of voluminous amount of traffic manually. We need tools. We need automated approaches to at least help us find what we're looking for, provide that high level overview. And sometimes I describe it as Google Earth for networks, start that high level overview and then drill down to packet level details.
I think another interesting thing here is this is a form of automation that people aren't always thinking about. A lot of people are still thinking about, mechanization of configuration. This is another form of automation, automating the monitoring. And there's a whole other area here we haven't talked about here, which is application analytics. You can still use that packet capture and ExtraHop product features around application analytics. Now, we haven't touched on those today. We've touched on them in previous shows. But
let's stay in security today, because I also want to emphasize the real-time nature of our analysis. When you have a human analyst looking at packets, it's very important and very valuable for forensics, but that's now a manual process and you're asking questions about what happened in the past. Whereas the real-time analysis of all of the packets, up to 100 gigabits, that's answering the question of what's happening right now. And that's where we're able to apply a vast array of techniques, including ML models and behavioral models. One thing I haven't mentioned is that we actually have an entire threat research team that does nothing but run attack tools all day long, pen testing tools. So they simulate attacks and they do this so that we can build behavioral profiles of what these attacks look like on the wire so that we can recognize them when they occur, at our customer sites.
Well, Jesse, this is a really good conversation. I feel like we probably could talk for at least another hour about this. So maybe we'll have to bring you back for more conversation. But in the meantime, if folks want to learn more about network detection and response or about ExtraHop, where should they go?
Well, certainly go to our website, www.extrahop.com. But take a look at our live interactive demo. It's a hosted version of the actual ExtraHop product, and we just kind of spray sample traffic at it that we replay in a 6-hour loop. But it's a great way to get a hands-on sense of our product. And it's something where I think we throw down the gauntlet a bit, because I don't see a lot of other vendors have hosted versions of their product for people to play with kind of ungated.
Awesome. All right. Yeah, we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Thank you, Jesse. And thank you to ExtraHop for sponsoring today's episode. And thank you to our listeners for being here with us. If you want to find more about the Packet Pushers podcast network for IT professionals, visit packetpushers.net and check out our subscribe page. Last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.